Now we are delighted to see so many with us tonight, and we cordially welcome you in the Lord's name. As you know, this is our closing meeting when we shall conclude our studies in the life of Jacob. Now, one or two intimations here. In relation to the distribution of tracts for Pape Avenue Gospel Hall, you're asked to meet in the hall on Lord's Day morning at 7:30. Then I'm asked to announce the Sister Sewing Class on Monday evening at 8 o'clock. Then a note for the younger brethren of Pape Avenue Gospel Hall. The brethren would desire that at the close of the meeting you might remain behind and carry all these chairs back to the basement where they properly belong. And then I understand that there's quite a company gathered downstairs in the basement. Now we are delighted to have you with us. As I was saying last night, we're very sorry that we can't get you in the hall here. They always tell us, you know, that it's much better to see the preacher. However, you're not missing much. But we are delighted that you've come along, and we are sure that although you can't see him, well, we are hoping that you'll enjoy the good word of God with us. Now for our closing study, shall we begin in Genesis chapter 33. Now as you're turning up, for those of you who are interested and others are making inquiry, tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock I expect to be in West Toronto, the junction, is that right? At 3 o'clock to minister the word of God and preach in the evening. Monday and Tuesday at 8 o'clock should find me in Brackendale, and in the will of the Lord on Wednesday in Brock Avenue. Then on Thursday, right through to Lord's Day, I expect to be in Rexdale. And at the moment, I have upon my mind to take up studies in the life of Abraham. Then a week on Monday, due back in Brock Avenue again, Tuesday, West Toronto, and Wednesday, Rexdale. Now, I think I've got it right. If you're able to come along, we'll be delighted. If not, then do pray for the meetings that God will bless his work. Now, Genesis chapter 33, please, at verse 1. And we'll just read as we go along. And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. We concluded our study last night by drawing attention to the incident at Peniel, when in that mysterious wrestling match, God reduced Jacob and brought him finally to an end of himself. Time and again, circumstances were such as should have reduced Jacob, but no. And it took this experience when ultimately and finally God broke Jacob, gave him to recognize that he must submit himself to the divine will. It was not primarily, as we noted, that Jacob wanted something from God. Oh no, the wrestling match began with the man. God wanted something from Jacob, and finally he got it. His education had been good. Away back yonder in Bethel in Genesis 28, he came to a knowledge of the house of God. At the opening of chapter 32, he came to a knowledge of the host of God. At the close of chapter 32 at Peniel, he came to a knowledge of the face of God. And he had an experience, real, living, deep. An experience that left his mark upon the man, for he halted upon his thigh. Such experiences are real, brethren and sisters. To get alone with God,
to have an experience of God that scars and marks your soul forever. And ever and anon you walk in the light and in the good of it. The strange thing is this, that you would have thought that after it, Jacob would have lived a flawless life, but he didn't. Not immediately. From chapter 35 onward, yes. But 33 and 34, no. That tells me this, that it's one thing to have an experience of God. It's another thing to live in the power of it and in the good of it. Isn't that right? It's always been like that. Thus David will go out to meet Goliath and slay him, and then he'll flee from Saul. Thus Elijah shall defy in the name of the living God the prophet on Mount Carmel, and then he'll turn and flee from Jezebel. Thus Peter will... get it. It's the same here. Now let's look at chapter 33 and watch these steps backward in Jacob's life. Verse 3. He passed over before him and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. 7 times he vows his obedience. Complete obedience is the idea behind it. But is this the man that has saw the face of God? Now bowing to a man like Esau. How quickly, brethren, we can drop from ground of dignity and honor to be like this. Verse 4. Esau ran to meet him and bowed, yes, braced him, fell on his neck, kissed him, and they wept. And all the expositors say, oh, well, you know, Esau wasn't a bad sort of fellow after all. Is that right? Do you think that? Do you recall last night when we dealt with this prayer in chapter 32 that the fourth thing that we noted in verse 11 was this, that Jacob made his direct plea in relation to Esau. Isn't that right? Well, verse 4 of chapter 33 is God's answer to Jacob's prayer. For God had Esau in his hand, and he was going to deliver Jacob in his own way, and his way was to turn Esau the way that God wanted him. Look now at verse 9. As Esau lines them up and brings forward the present, Esau's refusing. Now have you noted in verses 9 and 11 that Esau and Jacob use the same language? Verse 9, Esau says, I have enough. The close of verse 11, Jacob says, God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. I have enough. Esau has enough. He doesn't give any credit to anyone, for no doubt he feels that he's a self-made man. But when Jacob talks about having enough, he says, God dealt graciously with me. Ah, you say, that's good. Well, I don't disagree with you, but just you hold that in your mind, for I'll come back to that in a minute or two. Now, please, let's look at the next thing, verses 12 to 17. Esau says, when after it's all over, the presents, etc., Esau had met Jacob coming to meet him, so he assumed that Jacob was going the same road as him. So Esau turns about and he says in verse 12, well then, let us take our journey. And he says, I'll go before you. Now watch Jacob, verses 13 and 14. Now he says, of course, he says, Esau, you know that the children are tender, and the flocks and the cattle and the herds are with young. And if men should overdrive them one day, the flock will die. Now he says, let me pass over before. Thou will lead on softly according as the cattle can go and the children shall endure. So all seems very nice. They're all being so polite and courteous to each other. So Esau says in verse 15, all right then. But I tell you what I'll do. I'll leave you some of my men with you to help you and to guide you. And immediately, Jacob refuses. He says at the close of verse 15, what needeth it? There's no need for it. On you go. Verse 16. Esau made for Mount Seir. Isn't that right? Now at the close of verse 14, you'll note that Jacob indicated to him that while he was coming on his own, he would go to Mount Seir. Isn't that right? Now watch. Verse 17. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth in exactly the opposite direction to Seir. Here's Jacob back at his deceiving again. Now, I wonder what Esau thought when Jacob never appeared at Seir. I'll tell you a better one. I wonder what Esau thought when he remembered Jacob bringing in the name of God into this business. And now Jacob never arrives at Seir and turns out to be a liar. Now please, verse 17. Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him a house, the only patriarch that ever built a house. Verse 18. Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram, and he pitched his tent before the city. Hadn't he remembered Lot? He's in dangerous ground. Isn't that right? Now watch the result of all this. Verse 19, and he bought a parcel of a field. But had he forgotten the land was his by divine promise? Why buy a piece of land on the ground that belongs to you? By the promise of God. Verse 20, he erected there an altar and he called it El El Elohi Israel. Well, you say, that's all right. Yes, it's the God of Israel. God, the God of Israel, that's him. Actually, he's making for Bethel and for El Bethel, God of the house of God. You see, brethren, it's easy to erect an altar and think of God in relation to yourself. Isn't it? Like Holy Willie's prayer yonder that we talk about in Scotland, I, me and mine. It gets no further. Now, I want you to follow me very carefully and I want you to listen to me more carefully. Drop your eye to verses 1 and 2 of chapter 34. Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite prince of the country, saw her, you read on. Brothers and sisters, there are some circumstances in life that most people would like to live over again, but you can't. You can't. And if there was one experience in Jacob's life he would have given all that he possessed to live again, it's this one. It's this one that he couldn't. Now he's on his way back to Bethel and he stops at a halfway house. Now I reckon that he was between 8 to 10 years at Shechem. And you say, how do you make that out? Well, I'll tell you how I arrived at it. Look, please, right down at verse 25 of chapter 34. Chapter 34, verse 25. The Shechemites have been circumcised, and Simeon and Levi, at the close of the verse, slew all the males. Isn't that right? Now, of course, I think it's reasonable to assume that Simeon and Levi must have been somewhere around at least about 18 to 20 years of age. Isn't that right? I think that's a reasonable assumption. Now, let us go back now. Do you recall that when we were talking about the close of chapter 29, that Simeon and Levi were born to Leah. They were the second and third of her children. Isn't that right? Now, Jacob served 7 years and got Leah. He waited a week and he got Rachel before he served the 7 years. The other seven, I think that's clear from the passage. Now, so he's 7 years. Now, let's say that Reuben the eldest was born in the 8th year, Simeon in the 9th year, and Levi in the 10th year. Is that right? So that in the 9th and 10th year, Simeon and Levi are born. Now, Jacob was there 20 years, so that when he left, Simeon would be 11, and Levi would be 10. If they're young men of 18 to 20, he must have been in Shechem about 7 to 10 years. Is that right? It's all a question of reading carefully. Now what? He's on his way to Bethel, and he stopped at a halfway house. Verse 1, Dinah, his only daughter, went out to meet the young girls of the land and met a young man. Is that right? And the outcome was that she lost her virtue and her virginity. Now there are situations, every situation in which a person finds themselves, there is always a measure of personal responsibility. Isn't that right? But you know, she might never have fallen if Jacob had never stopped. By stopping at Shechem, he exposed her. And especially by stopping at Shechem near the city, he exposed her to what lay before her. And while she cannot be held wholly accountable and innocent, nevertheless, Jacob, by stopping there, exposed her to the influences that were all around her. Now listen carefully to me, you parents. If you want to live in a halfway house, good enough. If you want to allow the influences of the world to come in around your family, good enough. But in God's name, be prepared to pay the price. Will you note, please, that correspondingly, Jacob came out of it more or less unscathed. Isn't that right? I mean, he did complain later about his name stinking in the land and all the rest of it, but the point was that personally, while he felt it deeply, compared with Dinah, he had little or nothing to suffer. He expelled her and she bore the reproach. Not easy to talk about these things, brothers and sisters. We're living in difficult days. The tragedy today is this, that the believer's children are learning about the world in the father's house. You'll think about it, won't you? For you might come out on the whole unscathed. What about the children that are growing up in the atmosphere that you've created for them in your home? Simeon and Levi do their deadly work. And here's the tragedy about them. They'll need to hurry. The tragedy about Simeon and Levi is this, that they demanded that Shechemites be all circumcised before Shechem could marry Dinah. Or before the son could marry Dinah. Aye, Shechem is his name, yes? I want you to note, please, that they used the seal of the covenant. Not to introduce the Shechemites spiritually into the covenant people, but they used the seal of the covenant as a means to get at them. They adopted a pious outlook and spirit with murder in their hearts. They used a sin to commit a greater sin. Little wonder in Genesis 49 Jacob said, Simeon and Levi, instruments of cruelty. Now come to chapter 35, verse 1 please. We'll read verses 1 to 4. God said unto Jacob, Arise, go up to Bethel, and dwell there. Make there an altar unto God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother. Then Jacob said unto his household, and to all that were with him, Put away the strange gods that are among you, and be clean, and change your garments. Let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way which I went. They gave unto Jacob all the strange gods which were in their hand, and all their earrings which were in their ears. And Jacob hid them under the oak, which was by Shechem. That'll suffice for just now. At Shechem, God spake to Jacob. Jacob, he says, arise and go up to Bethel and stay there, dwell there. And he says, make there your altar unto God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother. Isn't that right? That is, in verse 1, God appealed to a former experience in Jacob's life, Genesis 28. Isn't that right? Now please, look at verse 3. When Jacob makes his appeal to the family and the household, he says, Let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way which I went. Will you notice, please, that God is making an appeal to Jacob in the light of a former experience, and Jacob remembers the experience. You know, it's a grand thing. It's a good thing. When God can appeal to you in the light of a previous experience. Do you remember the early days? Let your mind go back. Do you remember the days when you were in fire for God and Christ? Remember the days when nothing was difficult to overcome? Remember the days when gladly you accepted reproach for Christ? Remember the early days, so bright and clear? Ah, but things are different now. Is that right? The vision's gone. You're settled down. You're immersed in the business. You're getting on in the world. Everything's now to get your family where you want them to be. Some of the luster and the vigor and the fire has gone. Is that right? Are you happy? Come on now. Last night I asked the good folks here, are you happy with your Christian experience? Honestly, are you? I said to them something like this, when you're sitting down at night at the fireside, and you don't have fires here, of course, sitting down at home and you look across, you ever feel like saying, John, things are not what they used to be here. Mary, things have changed since the early days. Is that right? As I speak to you tonight, there's a strange sensation within you. You feel that in the light of what you once were, God's appealing to you now. Wouldn't you like to be that again? Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you like to be the man you once were and the woman that once you used to be? Is that right? Jacob, away you get back to yonder. Oh, it's 20 years, but maybe it's that time too since you remembered the early occasion. Is that right? You see, you're never too late to get back to go on with God. And to Jacob's credit, verse 2, put away the strange gods that are... What?
Well, let's stop a minute. Hold. Where did they come from?
Put away the strange gods.
Now, this is interesting.
Do you remember, we didn't touch on it, but do you remember a way back when Jacob decided to leave? And of course, just like Jacob, you know, he waited his time. And he waited till Laban was away sheep shearing. And then he made off.
So Laban got after him. And he made up on him.
And when they got going at each other, Laban's looking for his gods, for his teraphim.
Where was it? Rachel had it.
Where had she it?
Under the camel's furniture. And she sat on the top of it. You remember that?
You remember that when Laban started to search the place? He's looking for it. Do you remember how she deceived him? Read it for yourself.
That's the government of God, you know.
When Laban gave Leah to Jacob instead of Rachel, he deceived Rachel.
So she waited her time, and in due course she deceived him.
But she had him yonder. Oh, well, just under the camel's furniture, but now it's in the house. Where did the strange gods come from?
His wife brought them in.
Is that right, Graham?
Oh, I've been in homes, this is honest, God's my judge. I've been in homes, when I've gone in, they've made apologies and said, I came home from work one night and Jean had it here. You know?
Nothing to do with me, what was in their home?
Absolutely nothing.
But brethren, it sounds awfully poor when you suggest it was the wife that brought it in.
That's what happened here. Now watch.
They took the strange gods, they changed their garments, and they took the earrings. And that would suggest with other scriptures that in early days, earrings were associated with idolatry. And they took them all, and they hid them under the oak, the close of verse 4, which was by Shechem. And this is the first of four burials in a chapter of burials. Isn't that right? Your second burial is in verse 8. Your third burial is in verse 29. And your last burial is in verse 29. Isn't that right? Buried under the oak, verse 4. Deborah buried, verse 8. Rachel buried, verse 19. And Isaac buried, verse 29. Chapter of burials. So he took all the stuff and he buried it under the oak, which was by Shechem. Yes, Jacob's going to put things right in his house. You remember, don't you, that it was at Shechem that Joshua said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So Shechem's a place where you put the house right. Where you put the house right. Wonder what kind of home you've got.
You know, the angels came to Lot's home one day and they didn't want to go in. They went in the end, but you know, at the beginning they very politely said, thank you very much, Lot, but we'd rather stay outside than go into your home.
Now I'll leave you to interpret the tree, the oak. Most folks take it to be the cross.
Well, it's possibly true, you know.
There's the distinct possibility, brethren and sisters, that you and I sat down some night and just quietly considered Calvary. And saw the Son of God suffering and dying for us. and recognized that without condition he gave his life for us.
Maybe out of devotion to him we'll get rid of a lot of the rubbish that's accumulated.
Verse 5, they journeyed and strange, despite all that they had done to Shechem. The terror of God was upon the cities round about, and God preserved his servant and brought him right to Bethel. Verse 7, and he built there an altar and called the place El Bethel.
That's it.
Yonder he had been at Bethel. Now he's at El Bethel. You say, what's the difference?
Oh, there's a big difference. There's a difference, all right.
Bethel is the house of God. El Bethel is the God of the house of God.
Brothers and sisters, listen to me, will you? In God's name.
It's possible to be crystal clear as to the truth of the house of God.
Tell me, brethren, do you know the God of the house?
Come on. Do you? I tell you, if you know the God of the house, you'll be like God.
More. Verse 8. Deborah died. Isn't that right? Now watch the connection.
As soon as Deborah dies, verse 9, God appeared unto him, the close of verse 9, and blessed him. Isn't that right? Verse 10 reminded him about the change of his name, that he hadn't been walking in the good of since Peniel, but from now on he'll walk in the good of it. And verse 11, he'll declare his name to him as he declared of old to Abraham, I am God Almighty. But watch, all the string of blessing and name change for character and the revelation of God and the promise of God in verse 11 all hinges upon the fact and follows on from Deborah's burial.
You know what that means? Who's Deborah? Oh, she was his mother's nurse. Is that right?
So that when Deborah died, Deborah was the last link with the old life. And as soon as the last link with the old life is broken, God blesses, reminds him of his Israel name and character, declares his own name as God Almighty, and promises that he'll be fruitful and multiply the nation, him as a nation. Eh?
Now, brothers and sisters, I want to ask you something. Any links with the old life yet? Come on. Eh? Going on with anything that you know, no.
So, I'll leave you to apply this, will I?
Still doing any of the things you used to do before you were converted? Hmm?
Still hanging on? Still smoking? Going to the shows? Etc., 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 etc.
Watch. There came a moment when Jacob had arrived at Bethel. He's beginning to adjust everything to suit the eyes of God. Rebekah dies. And immediately God comes in and he blesses him. Thy name shall be called no more Jacob but Israel. And yes, and you find in verse 21, and Israel journeyed.
Israel journeyed.
So he's moving in the light of his new name, isn't he? Now let me come down now, please. And I'm down now at verse 14. Sorry, verse 13. God went up from him in the place where he talked
with him. Do you ever talk with God? I say, do you ever talk with God? Do you ever converse? That's Genesis 18, isn't it? Genesis 18 is not prayer primarily, it's converse. Do you remember in the book of Numbers, you start to read, don't you? You remember how that in the early chapters you've got the camp and all the armed men named, etc. Chapter 5, you've got the jealousy offering, isn't that right? Chapter 6, you've got the law of the Nazarite, isn't that right? Chapter 7, you start to read it. And you're not very long going down through it till you get tired. Why? Well, all the princes, the 12 of them, are bringing their offerings, and of course it's all just a repeat of the same thing. So you get tired of reading it all, and you go into chapter 8, and you're going to read about the lampstand and the consecration of the Levite, and you miss the last verse of chapter 7. You say, what's it? Well, listen to it. And when Moses was gone into the tabernacle of the congregation to speak with him, with Jehovah, then he heard the voice of Jehovah speaking unto him from off the mercy seat that was upon the ark of the testament between the two cherubims, and he spake unto him. I like that. That's what I would call converse. It's something like what took place in the Holy Mount. They talked with each other. Are you as near God as that? So that, as I said last night about Nehemiah, he's going on with the job and suddenly he turns. It's sometimes a couple of verses, sometimes a verse, sometimes only half a verse, sometimes just a single sentence, and on he goes with the job. That's it. A man or a woman to whom the way to the throne is clear, you have no difficulties. The Lord came down and he talked with him. Verse 14. Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he talked with him. Even a pillar of stone. Ah, yes. Yonder in Genesis 28, he put up a pillar in memorial of the vision, the house of God. Here he puts up a pillar in memory of the God of the house that spoke with him. Isn't that right? Now, but there's something different here from Genesis 28. Have you ever noted it? Huh? You read carefully. Do you remember yonder in Genesis 28, there's a pillar and there's oil? Look at the close of verse 14. There's a pillar, is that right? Right at the close he poured oil thereon, but in between he poured out a drink offering. Oh, that's interesting. Eh? You see, the drink offering speaks of joy and happiness. There's no drink offering yonder. Oh no, Jacob says, this is a dreadful place. He felt he was unfit for it. There's no drink offering, but not here. Everything's all right now. Jacob sorted things out a bit with himself. He sorted things out with the wife. He sorted things out with the family. Everything's all right. And Jacob rears his altar, pours oil upon it, and he pours out a drink offering, for Jacob's perfectly happy in the presence of God. Are you? Honestly, are you? You like nothing better than to be in the presence of God and speaking to him? Over yonder in Scotland many years ago, it was mine to listen time and again to men of God, giants in the land. You young men take every opportunity to listen to men who expound the scriptures. I used to go and listen to them, you know. Used to listen carefully to what they said and how they said it. try to learn as much as I could. While I know it's a gift from God, I try to learn as much as I could of this business, in case one day God might call me to it. I remember listening to our late esteemed and venerable brother Faraday. I don't suppose you've ever heard of him. Never was over here, I don't know. However, Mr. Faraday oftentimes used to go back to early days, and he told us when he became exercised to leave the Church of England, and a friend of his says, "Wouldn't you like to go down into the country to some of my friends and spend the weekend?" And Mr. Faraday was delighted. And away he went down, and of course, when it came the Lord's Day morning, they said to Mr. Faraday, "Well, just come along to the meeting with us, will you?" Of course, he had never been in anything like what we have at all, and along he went. I can hear Mr. Faraday yet. He said, "As a young man, I went in there, and he said I was shown a back seat." That was how he spoke, back seat. So, he said, the young man sat at the back seat, very critical, and watched all that went on. Never seen anything like this before, and he said, suddenly a very ordinary looking fellow got up and gave out a hymn. And then he says, another fellow, not much better, he got up and he worshipped. And he says, this went on. And then he said, after they had passed round bread and wine and they had all partaken of it, he says, and the young fellow was still sitting at the back watching all that went on, he said, suddenly a man got up. And he said, he asked them to open the scriptures. He said he had no robes on, no dog collar, nothing like that. This was all strange to Mr. Faraday. And he says he expounded the scriptures, and he says, and shortly the meeting's all over. Then he said this. He says, you know, brethren, he says, I've been reared in the Church of England. He says, I had to go to church, but oh, he says, it was an awful bore, an awful bore. But he says, you know what struck me about these people? What struck me about them was this, that looking at them, they all seemed to be perfectly happy to be there and in the presence of God. Perfectly happy. That's what struck him as a young man. Brethren and sisters, listen, shouldn't we be perfectly happy with God? He poured out a drink offering. Now please, I'm down now from verses 16 to 20. So you'll notice in verse 20 there's another pillar goes up. Isn't that right? Abram's the man of the altar, Isaac's the man of the wells, and Jacob's the man of the pillars. That's right. So the second pillar goes up. Now, but note this now. Just you glance down from verses 16 to 20. What's happening now? Oh, it's Rachel. It's Rachel. Probably the only woman that he ever genuinely loved. Rachel, the child's about to be born. And as he's born, she says, "Call him Benoni, son of my sorrow or son of my pain." Jacob called him Benjamin, the son of my right hand. Would you notice, please, verse 19? She died and was buried at Bethlehem. Bethlehem. So that now Jacob has come to recognize that death comes in upon everything that's naturally attractive and beautiful. And in the type, Christ takes her place. Benoni, son of the right hand. The man that was born at Bethlehem. That's it. That's it. Have you reached there? Have you? When everything that's naturally attractive and beautiful to you gives up its place, that Christ might enter in. Is that right? Brethren and sisters, relations in life are beautiful and sweet, aren't they? Wife, children, father, mother, brothers, sisters. Tell me, Have you learned to love Christ better than anyone else on earth? Learn to give him the supreme place. Benjamin, as you go on, Genesis 49, Benjamin shall raven as a wolf. Isn't that right? He shall, what is it, devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. So Benjamin is a type of the all-conquering, victorious Christ. Isn't that right?
But you see, Christ is prepared to come into your life.
And even the things that are so appealing and attractive to you, you'll find that Christ can supersede. The glory of the true Benjamin can fill your heart. Ah, but you know, brothers and sisters, on the human side, this is life, isn't it? Eh? He had come to the very place where the blessing of God had been his. The change of his name, the picture of character, had been made known. The blessing of God had been pronounced. He had erected his pillar, and in the joy and glory of his heart, he had poured out his drink offering, and Jacob's wondrously happy. And then Rachel died. Now that's life, isn't it, brothers and sisters? Joy and sorrow. The mountain and the valley. Victory and disillusionment. Rachel died. You know, he never forgot it. Read it when you go home, will you? Genesis 48, he's lying sick, probably in his gilded chamber in Egypt. Suddenly, in comes Joseph with his sons, and Jacob starts to talk. And then, without any apparent reason for it at all, he starts to talk about Rachel. His mind goes back over yonder to the road at Bethlehem. And he thinks again of the stop at the roadside. The agonizing suspense. The drawn-out cry, "Come, Benoni, son of my pain." The awful stillness. According to the revised version margin in Genesis 48, he says, "She died to my sorrow. She died to my sorrow." How difficult life can be, brethren, when you walk with God. Drop your eye, will you please, to verse 22 as I talk to you. Why Jacob seemed to be in the third heaven when he poured out his drink offering. Though somehow life was so wonderful, and he felt now that he was back on the very road. From thence he felt, well, life will be different now from the start, and I'm finished with the old man, the old Jacob. And I'll go on now in the dignity of a prince of God. My experience at Peniel will yield its fruit and its glory. One Rachel snatched from his side to break his heart. And then Reuben goes in to Bilhah. It would seem as if one thing after another came at him to destroy the joy that he had in his God. Ah, brethren, that's life, isn't it? That's life. Haven't you known it? Ah, brethren, I've seen me over yonder, maybe taking a week's meetings like this, the presence of God known and results from the ministry. That's the very week that things begin to happen. and you wonder how on earth you can stand the next night in the platform. I tell you, brethren, sometimes if you only knew the background, it's not always easy to walk with God. Now, please, time's going. Would you turn with me to Genesis 47? Verse 7. Genesis 47, verse 7. Joseph brought in Jacob his father and set him before Pharaoh, and Jacob left Pharaoh. Verse 10. And Jacob left Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. What do you notice, please? That Joseph, in due course, brings the aged pilgrim and patriarch into the presence of the greatest known monarch of that day, Pharaoh. Yonder, as this man stands in the presence of Pharaoh, we read strangely, Jacob left Pharaoh. And when the audience is over, verse 10, he's not dismissed by Pharaoh. You would have thought that, wouldn't you? But at the verse 10 it says, Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from Pharaoh. So that the man of God and the pilgrim is standing in moral superiority to the greatest king of the day. Listen, brothers and sisters, this is not a question of pride. I tell you, a man or a woman with an experience of God behind them, that have known something of discipline in the school of God and have matured, are morally greater than all the monarchs and presidents this world ever produced. They stand in holy dignity before these men, for they themselves are the sons of a king. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. That's what we're in the world for. We're in the world to be a blessing to others. That's it. No matter how great they may be. Dr. Gooding last night at West Toronto talked about early days when he met professors and men with a far keener intellect than he had, but devoid of divine knowledge and divine truth. Yet with their agnostic and atheistic ideas, they would assail his faith. That's it. That's it. But the saint of God ever stands superior to people like that and to people all around. It's not a question of pride, brethren. It's a question of a moral dignity acquired through knowing God. That's it. And as we bring these meetings to a close, I want to ask you, will there be any fruit in your life? For the ministry of divine truth is designed to produce results. That's it. For brethren and sisters, if you and I hear the voice of God, then we can never be exactly the same again. Now we can't. And life is like that. Right to the end of the road it will be like that. Brethren and sisters, you'll become like this. that you will never be so much looking back and talking about the past.
Folks are like that, you know.
But rather will you be looking forward. And your soul thrills that in days to come there will be walking with God, intimacy with Christ, fellowship with divine persons, and the plan and purpose will unfold as the ways of God encircle around you and God leads you step by step along the journey. And no matter how much you enter in to an experience of God, ever and anon your heart will rise with its deepest longings and sighs. Oh, for a closer walk with God, a calm and heavenly frame. Ever and anon your heart will pant that you might move through a world like this in touch with heaven and with God. And all around shall know that we are God's people, for the stamp of the divine is upon our character. The mark of God